Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 365, Side 2, The Ties That Bind, Part 4, Geopolitics in September 11th. This is being recorded on June 24th of the year 2002. We're going to continue right where we left off on Side 2, and that is with a discussion of the intelligence clashes between the United States and Germany. And I can appreciate that many listeners will think that what I'm about to say is utterly mad. In fact, there may be listeners who are thinking that everything I've had to say about September 11th is utterly mad. I can appreciate that. Please check out the book-length, detailed, annotated descriptions of the September 11th programs, For the Record 325 and counting, in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. And please access the audio files of past broadcasts. The Spitfire website has 2 half-hour segments that has real audio, rather, accessing the 2 most recent half-hour segments for the Record. And sister station WFMU-FM is compiling the For the Record segments on real audio. More recent broadcasts are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. And there are older broadcasts available on a longer URL. There are links in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website to these 2 URLs. Now, more about conflicts between German and U.S. intelligence about September 11th. We just accessed an article from the New York Times of June 11th of 2002. That's a Tuesday. The following Thursday, the New York Times had the following story. This it was also by Stephen Erlanger. Dateline Germany, but instead of Berlin, this is Hamburg. This is titled, German Officials Deny Knowing Whereabouts of Important Figure in Hamburg Plot. And again, note the conflict between U.S. and German intelligence. I've discussed that in, among other broadcasts, 331, 336, and number 348 as well. This article reads in part as follows. Senior German officials said today that they did not know the whereabouts of an important figure in the Hamburg plot that led to the September 11th attacks on New York and the Pentagon, and they speculated that he was being held in a third country at the request of the United States. While the United States denies having the man, Mohammed Haider Zamar, in its custody, a senior German intelligence official said, quote, I would be glad if the Americans would tell us if they have Zamar under their control or not, in some other country, unquote. By the way, in the June 11th article, note that the Germans and the French have both been reluctant to provide information to the United States about Zacharias Moussaoui. Ostensibly, this is because the United States allows capital punishment. I would note that there appears to be much more to that in this case. There are also some very interesting conflicts between the U.S. and Europe and Switzerland and the Underground Reich about freezing some of the Swiss-based money accounts, leading back to Saudi Arabia, the Al-Taqwa, Nada Management, Banco del Gotardo Milieu, the Clearstream Network, and a whole host of connections. I would note that Zacharias Moussaoui's French attorney is a law partner of François Genoux protégé Jacques Vergès. I would also note that Genoux has been cited by some authorities as the founder of Al-Taqwa, which was founded in 1988. Genoux committed suicide in 1996. Also, Ernest Bacchus, one of the people who founded the Clearstream Network, has opined that the funding conduits for September 11th would ultimately go back to a series of financial organizations founded in Switzerland by the late François Genoux and still operating 6 years after his death. I would also note that when Genoux, who was cited by Kevin Coogan in his encyclopedic Dreamer of the Day as being a friend, quite correctly, a friend to Adolf Hitler and Carlos the Jackal, François Genoux was represented in a terrorism trial in the early 80s by Baudin Dunant, who was the co-chairman of the board of directors of the Saudi investment company, the Swiss-based European investment arm of the very powerful Bin Laden organization. This should not be constituted as misconstruing support on the part of Kevin Coogan for my working hypothesis on September 11th. But again, note the interesting Genoux tributaries running in the directions of a number of aspects of September 11th, including the French counsel for Zacharias Moussaoui. Continuing. Speaking of Haider Zamar, Mr. Zamar, 41, a Syrian-born German citizen, is under investigation for his ties to Al-Qaeda. He was not arrested after September 11th, but was allowed to go to Morocco on October 27th with American knowledge, German officials say. He then disappeared. Friends at a Hamburg mosque Mr. Zamar attended said that his family last heard from him in December and believes that he has been kidnapped or arrested. Even his brother does not know where he is, they said. Mr. Zamar's role in the terrorist plot has been underestimated, German officials say. An imposing man of over 300 pounds, Mr. Zamar was a vocal advocate of holy war in Hamburg mosques and gave young Muslims advice on how to go to Afghanistan for military training. He befriended Mohammed Atta and some of the Hamburg-based hijackers, German officials and residents said, and he was a witness at the wedding of a cell member, Saeed Barhaji, skipping down. But a senior German intelligence official said the Germans had no evidence to support a report in the Washington Post today that says investigators have identified Mr. Zamar as the person who first recruited Mr. Atta into Al-Qaeda and played a key role in connecting him with the Al-Qaeda leadership in Afghanistan. Zamar was an elder statesman of the Mujahideen movement who fought in Afghanistan and the Balkans, a senior German intelligence official said today. He knows all the people involved in Hamburg, but that's not enough to bring someone into a special structure. It is pure speculation to argue that he recruited Atta, unquote. But the officials supported a strong suggestion in the Post article that Mr. Zamar might be in custody and said that American officials have given the Germans only limited information about him or about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who the Americans say orchestrated much of the planning behind the September 11th plot. Mr. Mohammed also visited Germany and is said to be a key connection between Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and the Hamburg cell, unquote, skipping down. Mr. Zamar came to Germany, where his father lived, in 1971 and became a citizen in 1982. He was a regular at the Al-Quds Mosque here and at the smaller Muhabjarain Mosque, its worshippers say, skipping down again. After September 11th in the apartment of Mr. Bahaji, the cell member, German investigators, After September 11th in the apartment of Mr. Bahaji, the cell member, German investigators found books on holy war in which Mr. Zamar had written dedications. There were 94 copies of Mr. bin Laden's call for a war against the infidels also seized, which had been photocopied by Mr. Zamar, he told friends. When German officials searched Mr. Zamar's apartment in mid-November, they found documents from Pakistan and two cartridges from a Kalashnikov combat rifle. In addition, according to Der Spiegel, two of his young recruits on their way from Germany to Afghanistan, a 27-year-old German from Kosovo, and a 22-year-old from Lebanon were arrested in Pakistan on September 10th. Noting again, one of the ties that is binding, the conflicts between the U.S. and Germany in this highly complex event. And I think that behind that lies the conflict between the United States and what I call the Underground Reich. One of the complications is that in addition to collaborating with the West and Saudi and U.S. intelligence in the Afghan war against the Soviets in the 1980s, there are firm indications that elements of Al-Qaeda, again, operating through the Saudi intelligence milieu and acting as proxies, in effect, for elements of U.S. and Western intelligence, there are indications they also were operating in the Balkans, both in Bosnia, where Al-Qaeda elements in cooperation with the Saudis were active against the Yugoslavian government, or the government of the former Yugoslavia, and also in Kosovo. And looming in the historical background of the Balkans conflicts, the fact that the 13th Waffen-SS, or Hanjar Division, one of whose members was Ali Izetbegovic, the first president of Bosnia, and the 21st Waffen-SS, or Skanderbeg Division, were both composed of Balkan Muslims. The divisions were recruited by the Grand Mufti. One of the interesting things that has emerged is that apparently there is considerable reluctance on the part of the U.S. State Department to have Richard Holbrooke testifying at the trial of Slobodan Milosevic, who was on trial for war crimes. And again, this should not be misconstrued as indicating support for the excesses of the Serbs in the Balkans War, but what is interesting is that there are very firm indications that Al-Qaeda was operating in the Balkans and that, as I've indicated before, they were working with the United States. Ultimately, the Underground Reich and Al-Qaeda and Islamo-fascist elements turned on the U.S. with a vengeance, not unlike the way the Nazis brokered a peace with Joseph Stalin that ultimately invaded the Soviet Union. One of the complications, one of the ties that bind in connection with the Balkan connections of Al-Qaeda is not only the fact that Slobodan Milosevic, who was definitely a war criminal, is basically aware of the Al-Qaeda U.S. intelligence, Western intelligence link in the Balkans, but his prosecutor, Carla Del Ponte, is also a former law partner of Pier Felici Barchi, who is Youssef Nada's attorney and part of the Banco del Gottardo Clearstream network that also has links going back to the Genou milieu. I think this is another of the ties that bind, and I think this is also one of the intelligence conflicts going on behind the scenes. Financial Times of Wednesday, June 12th of 2002. This is by Carol Ahoyos, UN correspondent in New York. Milosevic war crimes trial threatened by U.S. demand. Subtitled, State Department wants key witness Holbrooke to testify behind closed doors. This article reads in part, the U.S. is jeopardizing the war crimes trial of Slobodan Milosevic, the former Serbian president, by demanding that a key witness testifies behind closed doors, according to diplomats. The State Department is pushing for the court in The Hague to keep secret the testimony of Richard Holbrooke, architect of Bosnia's Dayton Peace Accords. Diplomats and U.S. officials say the Bush administration is wary of setting any precedent by having Mr. Holbrooke or other top U.S. officials testifying in international courts before the creation of the International Criminal Court, which the U.S. opposes. Negotiations with the State Department have become so difficult that Carla Del Ponte, the United Nations prosecutor who has been given 14 months to present her case, is said to be considering not calling the witness. And again, I suspect one of the ties that is binding here constitutes the Al-Qaeda Balkan Muslim links through Saudi Arabia, and with evidentiary tributaries running back to the 13th and 21st Waffen SS divisions recruited by the Grand Mufti, who was also active in the World Muslim Congress, one of the Islamo-fascist organizations that stretches from the era of World War II and the connections of World War II, all the way on up through the anti-Soviet effort by the Mujahideen, which spawned Osama bin Laden as a warrior and many of the other elements of Al-Qaeda as well. Also bearing in mind another of the ties that bind, Carla Del Ponte, who has connections to the Shikarki AG case. That was one of the many organizations in Europe used in connection with not only the Afghan Mujahideen support effort, but also the Iran-Contra affair. It involved drug trafficking and some very, very interesting elements indeed. It was one of the European drug connections was tied in with the Pizza Connection bust in the late 1980s. The prosecutor in that case, Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani himself is bound by many of these same ties. As a U.S. attorney, he was, shall we say, less than vigorous in his pursuit of Manzar El-Kassar in connection with the Achille Lauro hijacking, the Clearstream Network and BCCI, as well as being, shall we say, altogether discreet in connection with the Shikarki AG case. And this is not to say that he was necessarily overtly conspiratorial, but Rudy the Rock is very much bound by these same ties and will not be able to be, shall we say, completely vigorous should he, for example, succeed Dick Cheney as Bush's vice presidential running mate in 2004, should Dick Cheney take the heat for Enron, or should he decide not to continue as vice president because of a change of heart, so to speak, don't be surprised to see Rudy the Rock, himself very much bound by some of these ties that bind, don't be surprised to see Rudy the Rock as the Republican vice presidential candidate in 2004. That would help carry New York. It would also give the Republicans the perfect soundbite campaign spots, the two heroes of September 11th. Both of them very, very much bound by the ties that bind. Now, noting Carla Del Ponte, her position as a law partner of Pier Felici Barchi, and also the fact that Shakarki, as of Shakarki AG, were also on the board of directors of SECO, the Saudi investment company, and note that a co-chairman of the board was Balbin Dunant, the former attorney for François Genoux. I would note that one of the areas of conflict and one of the ties that bond here concerns the fact that the Swiss have been less than forthcoming about the money trails in connection with September 11th. Those money trails would go all the way back to the Third Reich. They involve much of the Wahhabi maneuvering. They involve many of the laundering fronts that helped to bind the milieu of Enron, and the Islamo-fascist milieu and the Wahhabi lobby that I've talked about in among other programs, 356, 7, 8, and 9. I would note that Al-Taqwa, in addition to the François Genoux-linked Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, is among the organizations that the Europeans are taking a very, very different approach to than are the Americans. Reviewing an article that we looked at in For the Record 360 briefly near the end, Wall Street Journal of May 21st of 2002, this is by Ian Johnson, Christopher Cooper, and Philip Shishkin. This article is entitled, Bush Faces Widening Gap with Europe. Skipping down, the Americans are good at intelligence information, says an Italian official who has followed Bank Al-Taqwa, a Bahamas-based lender that the U.S. alleges financed the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, again quoting, but they provide little that can be used in court. We're still waiting for real information. Again, noting the connections between the milieu of Al-Taqwa and the Islamo-fascist slash underground Reich slash terrorist milieu of François Genoux, Youssef Nada, Ahmed Huber, and others. Skipping down. Indeed, Europe's list of terrorist organizations omits several groups whose U.S. assets Washington has frozen. They include the anti-Israel Hezbollah group, and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a Syria-backed group that Israel holds responsible for the recent murder of its tourism minister. By the way, I would note that in For the Record 350, as well as in For the Record 360, we noted that in an FBI tape of a bug, a recording made by a bug in Sheikh Rahman's apartment, he told an associate, slow down a little bit. The one who killed Kennedy was trained for 3 years. That reference very possibly alluding to the patsy in the Robert Kennedy assassination, Saran Saran, who did not actually pull the trigger but was the carefully groomed patsy. An affidavit submitted by Robert Byron Watson in connection with the assassinations of Martin Luther King and of Robert Kennedy alleged that the operational apparatus in both of those assassinations was an arms and drug smuggling ring out of Georgia, one of whose key functionaries was Fuad Habash, the full name Fuad Habash Ansara, who was the brother of George Habash, a Genoux associate, and the co-founder, along with Wadi Haddad, of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Now, more about the ties that bind, more about the conflicts between the U.S. and Europe, and in particular, the conflict between the U.S. and Europe over some of the Swiss funding conduits apparently involved in September 11th, and again, all stretching all the way back to the Underground Reich and the milieu that Ernest Back has talked about in the program that we are in 356, 7, and 9. This conflict between the U.S. and Europe over some of the terror financing, and the most important element in Al-Qaeda are these financial links, because with much of the Muslim world being as impoverished as it is, the enormous financial clout that is available to the Wahhabi lobby, as I call it, and to their associated underground Reich elements, as well as to associated elements of the petroleum industry who could be considered perhaps supra-political. In this context, one of the key aspect, in my opinion, are the funding conduits. If you don't cut off the funding, then ultimately more terrorists will arise. We're not going to be able to kill all of them. Financial Times, Monday, June 10th of 2002, Jimmy Burns in London writes as follows, headlined by the FT, tracking of terror funds undermined, unquote. The U.S.-led crackdown on terrorist funding is being undermined by a lack of cooperation in the international financial community, secret talks between the world's top financial investigators have concluded. After making a gloomy assessment of Everett's efforts since September 11th to close down the financial resources of terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda, Investigators believe it is virtually impossible to hit the deadline for the end of this month for implementing measures to combat terrorist funding. The new measures, from making terrorist funding a criminal offense to laws requiring financial institutions to provide detailed information on money transfers, were recommended last autumn by the Financial Action Task Force created by the Group of Seven leading industrialized nations, which set the deadline. So note, conflicts between the U.S. and Europe over organizations like Al-Taqwa. Note the, quote, undermining of the attempts at neutralizing the funding conduits for Al-Qaeda. And we're going to use this as a transition point to another major element of the ties that bind, and that is the effect jointly of the Bush economic program and of the upsurge in terrorism and the threat in particular of nuclear terrorism of some other attack by terrorist weapons of mass destruction on the American economy. And ultimately, I believe that the Bush tax cut, the enormous budget deficits those will be precipitating, the military buildup and the unsupportable U.S. current accounts deficit, the Maginot missile shield, the Bush tax cuts, and the American current account deficit, ultimately representing perhaps the greatest threat to the United States on the horizon. Terrorism will figure into this in a big way. More from the Financial Times of London. This from the FT of Monday, June 17th of 2002. This is an article by Alan Beatty in Halifax, Canada. Its headline, "Share Price Falls Are Inexplicable," says O'Neill. The reference is to Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill. An individual who, by the way, I don't think has done too bad a job. I have obviously no use for Bush or for the Republicans, whom I believe to be literally an extension of the Borman Organization. One should give credit where credit's due. I think Paul O'Neill has done a fairly decent job, at least in regard to his behavior vis-a-vis some of the Wahhabi underground Reich funding conduits. Skipping down, Treasury Secretary O'Neill said that recent movements in equities, which dropped sharply last week, belied the underlying strengths of the U.S. economy. Quote, "I don't know why markets are where they are today," unquote, he said. "Eventually, it will go back up, perhaps sooner than later. There is an unbelievable movement in the market without what I believe to be substantive information," unquote. He said that there were, quote, "a couple of clouds," unquote, over U.S. confidence, fears of another terrorist attack, and concerns about Enron and other corporate bankruptcies, but that this should be outweighed by the strong fundamentals of the U.S. economy. The meeting did not discuss the recent falls in the dollar, and Mr. O'Neill said the U.S.'s strong dollar policy remained unchanged, unquote. Skipping ahead, the communique issued by the group also contained a thinly veiled threat to Switzerland that it would not be allowed to continue blocking information flows to other governments on tax payments. Quote, "We call on all countries to permit access to and exchange bank and other information for all tax purposes. OECD countries should lead by example," unquote, it said. Many countries have become irritated with Switzerland's bank secrecy laws, which they say prevent effective campaigns against tax evasion and money laundering. And please note that, because some of the Al-Taqwa / Al-Qaeda / Wahhabi lobby funding conduits loom very, very large indeed in the background of the September 11th situation. I would also note, in a speculative context, there is also an overlap between the Al-Taqwa, Al-Qaeda, Swiss financial milieu and the Holocaust judgments that have been adjudicated in recent years. And that also has been a source of some conflict. Financial Times of Wednesday, June 12th. John Otters in New York and William Hall in Zurich writing, "Judge angers Swiss on Holocaust cash. The U.S. judge overseeing payouts to Holocaust survivors whose money was left in Swiss banks has provoked an international dispute by forcing the resignations of lawyers in Zurich dealing with the claims." It'd be interesting to know who those lawyers are. And again, I've cited the Holocaust-related lawsuits in connection with the Deutsche Telekom situation, the Wilmer, Cutler & Pickering law firm, with former CDU treasurer Matthias Wismann involved, had represented the Swiss banks in those Holocaust lawsuits while also lobbying for Deutsche Telekom. New York Times of Tuesday, May 28th of 2002, had a very important column by Paul Krugman. This was titled Where's the Boom? And it deals with the current accounts deficit in the United States and the fall off in net direct foreign investment and its implications for the United States. Foreigners have been wildly enthusiastic about America, skipping down. Foreigners have been wildly enthusiastic about America for years, an attitude we have come to count on because we need $1.2 billion in capital inflows every day to cover our foreign trade deficit. What happens as they lose their enthusiasm? One of the largely unreported stories of the last few months, in the U.S. media anyway, is the precipitous decline of foreign confidence in American leadership and institutions. Enron, aggressive accounting, budget deficits, steel tariffs, the farm bill, FBI bungling, all of it adds up, in European minds in particular, to what Barton Biggs of Morgan Stanley calls a fall from grace, unquote. Foreign purchases of U.S. stocks, foreign acquisitions of U.S. companies are way off. And I would add that with the euro coming in as a growing reserve currency threat to the dollar, and with Bush's enormous tax cuts at the same time as he's increasing military spending, this is already pushing the U.S. budget back into the red ink. And this is basically worsening the American current accounts deficit situation. That's a sum total of all debts, public and private. Direct net foreign investment in 2000 was $200.1 billion, and it dropped to just over $2 billion, or 99%, by 2001. And that is a big, big drop. It threatens not only the status of the dollar, it threatens the very existence of the United States. And again, the Bush tax cuts, which will worsen the budget deficits and the U.S. current account deficit, in combination with the Maginot missile shield, which will drain valuable American fiscal resources away from needed military adjustment to the Skorzeny-type terrorist war that we're going to have to fight or are fighting, plus the fact the United States might get nuked or anthraxed or whatever, those are also having a huge effect on the net direct foreign investment and in confidence in the U.S. as a repository for investment. And the Bush administration is not helping this. Very quickly, Financial Times, Monday, May 20th of 2002, Perronet de Pen in Washington, more terrorist attacks almost certain. Cheney, Dick Cheney, saying that basically future terrorist attacks on U.S. soil are, quote, almost certain, unquote. And that, no doubt, is just causing investor confidence to soar. I'm, of course, being sarcastic. More brilliant statements, this by Rumsfeld. Financial Times, Wednesday, May 22nd of 2002, by Lydia Adichungi in Washington. Mass destruction weapons attack inevitable, unquote. This by Rumsfeld. Terrorists will inevitably get their hands on chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons and use them against the U.S., Donald Rumsfeld, the U.S. Defense Secretary, said yesterday. That, too, no doubt, is building investor confidence, and there are a lot of indications of budding investor confidence as well. Again, I'm being sarcastic. Financial Times, Wednesday, May 22nd, that same day that Rumsfeld made those cheerful comments, Mary Chung in New York reports, terror alerts accelerate Wall Street losses. Well, gee, I wonder why. I'm not going to read the article. Not hard to figure. Also from the Financial Times, this of Wednesday, May 22nd, the same day that Rumsfeld made those statements, Jenny Higgins, James Politi, and Ken Higino report, terror fears trigger run for havens. A slide in stocks yesterday helped government bonds hold on to their gains of Monday, with investors also favoring treasuries amid nervousness over further possible terrorist attacks. Well, why do you suppose investors are getting nervous? A couple of things we're going to be talking about in the next program, and that concerns the geopolitics around the Caspian Sea oil and some of the conflicts between U.S. and Germany. FT of that same day, Wednesday, May 22nd, links with Putin leave Europe out in cold. That by Judy Dempsey in Brussels. And also from the Financial Times, this from that very same day, last four articles from the same day, Carola Hoyos, NATO-Russia alliance hits Germany's UN ambitions. Geopolitics, anybody? Again, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail at spitfirelist.com. The Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. Check out the detailed program descriptions and the links to WFMU, wfmu.org/Dave Emery, and the other longer URL. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 365, The Ties That Bind, Part 4, Geopolitics, in September 11th. This is being recorded on June 24th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.